Welcome back, everybody, to Calibrating Your Compass, a Brew University Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, and we are diving through all of our seven leadership competencies with my guests, Matt and Bob Briggs. Bob, Matt, welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. Once again, it's we're delighted to be here and look forward to our conversation.
Thanks, Jeff. Hopefully we can wrap all this up into one pretty package and they don't have to listen to the first seven because this one's so good, but I'm not a good salesman if I tell you to only listen to this one. So hopefully you've listened to the other seven and this is number eight.
They're coming out a week at a time, Matt. So by the time they hear this, they'll have already had to listen to the other seven. So we're going to be talking today. We've just finished talking through over the last 7 or 8 weeks or so, all of our various leadership competencies and learning the history of how we got to them and how they became part of our culture. And I think as we sort of wrap this all up and take a short look back at our competency model and why we put it into place, it really is all about culture. If there's one theme I think we touched on in every single episode, it was the idea that these things that we do, they are part of building the culture that we are trying to build, an intentional, purposeful culture here at JJ Taylor. Because as I've long said, doing what I do, every company has a culture, only some take the time to define it. Right. And the companies who don't define their culture, it will be defined for them. And it's rarely what they would want it to be. We are blessed that, you know, 2 decades or so ago, our leadership team sat down and said, this is what we want to be. This is who we want to be as an organization. They put these competencies to the page to give us this roadmap, to give us this compass, really, that points us in our true north and tells us who we are and what we want to be and helps us when the map doesn't work. And so as we bring this all together and we look back, what can we really try to understand about the intent of all of this and why our team, our leadership team, put it together in terms of building and preserving a certain kind of culture here at JJ Taylor?
You know, I can remember like it was yesterday meeting with John Taylor and John's passion and drive to really build a true first choice culture. And so what led, what came from that conversation were the seven competencies, the J.J. Taylor leadership model. And so he believed deeply, inherently, that we can create the right culture by being able to teach our leaders how to behave and really being able to institutionalize our core values. So that was really kind of the foundation of everything that we built. And, you all have really done an outstanding job of really building a great culture around those competencies, around the core values. And, we all know that culture is so important. It's all about creating a great place to work where people can thrive, where we can achieve high levels of customer satisfaction. And, those things drive revenue and profit.
You know, it's such a overlooked aspect of success that sometimes I think even a lot of great organizations, a lot of great companies, they don't even realize how important culture can be to their ultimate success if they haven't taken time. Although nowadays, most companies that are highly successful have figured this out and are on it. But even if you look at teams that are small and maybe have never had any formal training in this or any formal consultation in this, they still ultimately end up in the same place because I think there's something almost innate about the idea of caring not just about what you do, but how you do it. And that is a hallmark of successful people, regardless of whether they were coached to success or found success more inherently or anything of the like. It's just, there's just something about caring about the details and caring about not just what you do, but how you do it that I think is somewhat baked in and essential to the DNA of being successful.
You know, so many organizations believe that culture is just something that you can't get your arms around it. It kind of operates in the background, and that's so false. One of the things that JJ Taylor did early on is they defined the culture that they wanted, and then they executed on the things that were required to really institutionalize that culture. And in addition to that, it's once you build it, it's something that has to be continually nurtured, protected, and really continuing to create that sense of urgency around the environment that we want as an organization. I'll tell you a quick story about culture. One of our best clients is an organization by the name of EOG Resources. And EOG is the top performing oil and gas company in the world, whether it's profitability or growth or stock price or any way you want to measure it. And one of the neat things about EOG is that they've been on Fortune's 100 best companies to work for. People coming out of, kids coming out of college today with engineering and geology degrees will kill to go to work for EOG Resources. But a lot of people don't know what EOG stands for. And what EOG stands for is Enron Oil and Gas. The reason that's important is because Enron Oil and Gas happened to spin off before the collapse of Enron. And the four people that really built the company after the spinoff, they built that organization not based on getting oil and gas out of the ground, but based on the culture. And they've built a world-class culture that is well-known in the industry, and that's why people kill to go to work for them. And conversely, at one time, EOG was a great, or Enron was a great company. They had core values. They had leadership competencies. It was a well-run organization, but because they didn't tend to the knitting, they began to slip. And over time, a little bit at a time, they literally fell off the cliff. And so the moral of that story is that culture has intrinsic value. It is something that can be defined, it can be measured, but just as importantly, it has to be protected over time. J.J. Taylor has built something great, but it's got to be protected.
Well, and I love that you bring that up, Bob, because I think that to me is the heart of the message that we try to instill with all of our managers throughout the Great Manager Program, which is not just here's our culture and here's who we are and where do you fit into it. But in the final day and a half of that program, and in the final message that I give to all our managers when they head out the door is, you're now in the position of being the protectors of that culture. You are now expected to not only know this and understand it and live by it, but you have to enforce it. You have to become part of the mechanism that keeps this alive and keeps this going. And so let's talk a little bit about, I think, how important it is to protect intentionally a culture and management's role in that, because I really do feel like our frontline managers, supervisors, they are the most critical piece of protecting and defining the culture the way we want it to be.
Yeah, that's good, Jeff. I mean, the frontline managers and supervisors are the tip of the spear. So if you're listening, and doesn't matter what level leader you're at, but you maybe you're in the job a week, or you've been a leader for 10 years at J.J. Taylor, or you were in some of the first classes when we rolled this out. But first step is, when you think of the first choice culture components and the core values and the leadership competencies, do you know what they are? You got to know what they are, then you have to understand what they mean, what they don't mean. And then, as you said, you got to live by them. And then, are you teaching others to live by them? So today, tomorrow, after you listen to this, can you assess and say, hey, what did I do today to build that first choice culture or protect it just a little bit? Or what are the things I did not do or I saw my team not do that might have hurt that first choice culture? And then go ask your team that same question and assess, say, let's look in the mirror. What did we do to build the first choice culture and make it stronger? Or what did we do that made it a little bit weaker that we need to make sure we fix for tomorrow?
One of the things that's important about what we're talking about now relative to protecting the culture is that every single leader in the company needs to own it. They need to take personal responsibility for maintaining and protecting the culture. And the word we like to use for leaders, another word is ambassador, because basically the way you need to think as a leader is you are representatives of J.J. Taylor, and your behavior matters. Being able to model the right behavior, being able to teach what you know to people in your organization, and of course I think it's really being very intentional about walking the talk. as a leader, where we live in a fishbowl, people are watching every move that we make. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like kids, you know, what you do is more important than what you say. And so being good models, being good ambassadors of the culture is absolutely critical to being a J.J. Taylor leader.
It couldn't be more important. And the benefits are so tremendous when we get this right, and so devastating when we get this wrong. You know, as we're recording this, we're in one of the most difficult hiring times we've ever seen. We're struggling. Everybody is struggling with turnover, struggling with staffing. And as much as we are struggling, when I look around the industry, when I look around at other companies who we know haven't put the kind of effort in that we have to culture, who don't have managers and leaders who are focused on and are protecting and building that culture, it is so much worse. I mean, we've seen other distributors who have management doing scheduled shifts in the warehouse because they can't get the beer out the door. We've seen other distributors not delivering outside of their top accounts, or in some cases just straight not at all, because they don't have the people to get it done. And why are they bleeding staff? Why can't they get more people back in the door? Is it because they lack the pay? Is it because they lack the will? Is it because they lack the time? No, they've got the same resources that everybody has. They lack the culture. They are not a place that people want to work. And right now, we're in a time where people have more choice than they've ever had. Employees who are willing to show up to work are priceless, and people are paying whatever they can and doing whatever they can. But at the end of the day, those employees have unlimited choice of where they want to be, and they're choosing culture, which is why our numbers, I believe, are better than our competition and other places when it comes to retention and staffing. As bad as they are, and as much as we may feel the strain, by comparison, they are so much better. And I truly believe that is attributable just to the culture that we have and the fact that this is a place people want to come to work. They feel important. They feel included. Yes, they're well compensated. Yes, they've got a great comp package. But everybody's offering great compensation. So what makes the difference? The answer is, when I show up to work at J.J. Taylor, I like my manager. I like the team that I'm a part of. I trust them. I feel good working here. I'm proud of the work that I'm able to do. And right now, that may be the only thing that is differentiating companies who have people showing up and companies that are literally trying to keep the doors open.
You know, one of the things we have to do in business is we have to build and maintain a competitive advantage. And there's nothing that creates competitive advantage more so than culture. As you point out, it's a competitive advantage in attracting and retaining talent. It's a competitive advantage in being able to serve our customers more effectively. It's a competitive advantage in terms of being able to control our cost and be able to run efficiently. So this idea of culture has very specific value that can be measured, by the way. And so, you know, the best organizations always start with culture. And one of the things that maybe the most important thing that J.J. Taylor has done to be so successful is that, you know, the company went on this journey, you know, 10, 12 years ago to really build a world-class high-performance culture. And you've been very successful at that.
You know, something, Jeff, that I think we've talked about it throughout this series, and I think it's important at any time, but while we're recording this during an ongoing pandemic and you have hybrid work models and virtual work models, it's even more important. But when we think about how you build trust, how you communicate effectively, how you lead change, how you facilitate team success, you can't do any of those things if you're not a visible leader. You've got to spend time with your people. You have to be accessible. You know, Toyota is considered the best manufacturer or builder of things in the world, probably right now when we're doing this in 2021, as far as quality and efficiency. And, you know, there's some Toyota production system wisdom that has overtaken the whole world. One of the terms is Genchi Genbutsu, and it means go and see. You don't know what's going on out there with your customers, with your delivery drivers, with your warehouse. If you're not out there with your people talking to them and seeing what's going on and being available, and then especially in this time, we've got to find ways around, through, or over the barriers we have in this remote, virtual work environment. And you know, you can't lead from your office, you can't lead from your cell phone, and you can't lead from your keyboard. You've got to be with people, engaging them to be able to build trust, communicate well, align on expectations, hold them accountable. All those other things are tools, right? Yes, you get some work done from your office or your cubicle. You get some work done from your home office. You get some work done from your cell phone or through email. But those are all secondary to being with your people. And so everyone listening needs to think about, hey, am I doing those things to be visible and spend time with my team? And yes, I know you might have to do it socially distanced, or you might have to do it with the mask on, or you might have to do it on a video call that you normally had not done up to this point in your career, you know, going before the last 18 months. But all of this to encompass one thing that's really important, and important in the first choice culture to maintain it, is being visible with our teams and with our people. So we can do, apply, and work on all these things we've been talking about for the last several weeks.
You know, it's funny how at the beginning of 2020, the questions everybody was asking was, can businesses adapt and keep up productivity in a remote environment? And our company as well was, how productive can we be if we're remote? Can everybody maintain productivity if they're remote? And here we are almost a year and a half, 2 years later. And now the question that I'm starting to really ponder is, are we too productive in this environment? And by that, what I mean is, we've lost the spaces in between, right? When everybody's at home focused on nothing at work, when there are no interruptions and no drop-bys and no walk-arounds and no, let me just stop and catch up at the water cooler and see how we're doing. Have we reached this level of hyper-productivity where we've forgotten entirely about how important those spaces in between are? And as managers and as leaders in a remote workforce, and our workforce has been remote even before remote was cool, even before the office went remote. Our guys are spread out over 17 counties in Florida, over, you know, thousands of accounts and cities, blocks in Minneapolis. It's not unusual for our managers to always have been somewhat disconnected, but we got used to those Friday meetings, or we got used to those in the office times. And now with some of that having taken a step back, we have to be more intentional than ever to create those connection points and those moments. You know, one thing that I've really started to focus on in the last few months is, how do we do virtual team building? How do we do team building in an environment where we can't get together? We initially, everybody's response was put it on pause. And now we've reached the point where we can't wait any longer. We've got to get back to finding a way that teams and people can take time and connect. And I noticed it just recently. My wife is, her company's been almost exclusively remote for the last 2 years and still really is, but they did some training recently. And so they had to bring people in the office in a socially distanced way. They found themselves more often than not staying late because they were just catching up on chit chat, just because they hadn't seen each other in a while. And the value of that bonding time and that connection is so important that they were all willing to stay past the clock to do it. And so I really think that speaks to the heart of how important culture is. And as leaders, no matter what the physical environment or the challenges, we have to find a way to make time and space for that. We can't let the fact that we're not having the regular meetings the way we used to, or the fact that we've distilled down our conversations and our communications to these very direct forms, evaporate how important it is to just have some time. Just have some time on the calendar for people to get together, even virtually, and just catch up on the day. How's it going? What's going on? You know, we don't bump into each other in the hallway anymore. So how do we replicate that bump into each other culture inside of a virtual environment? It's no easy answer, but I think it's important, because you can see that if we don't, we start to lose the little bits of affection and camaraderie that make places like this special. Every time we talk about to our employees, what is it you love most about JJ Taylor? The answer always comes back. We love who we work with. We love our coworkers. We love the people. It feels like a family. And that family right now is remote. So how do we make sure that we don't lose that in that environment? It's really important, because it is at the heart of the culture that we're building, for sure.
The hard thing about that, Jeff, is that, you know, no one knows how to do that. We're all in an area where we just don't have any experience. And so, you know, we've gotten feedback from a number of our clients trying to figure this all out. And, you know, we've seen some things that look pretty good, that make some sense. And we've seen some things that are pretty ridiculous. And so it's going to take a lot of thought, a lot of careful thought on how to do things differently. Leading in a virtual environment is dramatically different than being face to face with your people. And I think it's going to take some good, hard, thoughtful work to be able to figure out how to do it going forward.
I completely agree, Bob, but I also think it's going to take some experimentation and some intentional effort and some trying. And I think that's the other thing, that as leaders in a small company with flexibility and a leadership team that values this, because too many organizations, unfortunately, have leadership teams that would never let you have the space or the time or the resources to try. And I think we're one of those companies that values it enough that we will. And we got to try. We got to try stuff, even if it's silly. And even if it fails, I think if we're not even trying, if companies don't even make the attempt, then they're waving the white flag, and that doesn't seem like us. So I would encourage our leaders too to say, yes, it's going to be difficult, and yes, it's going to be silly, and sometimes it's not even going to make sense, and some things we'll try them and they will fail spectacularly. But now is the time to try, because what we can't do is throw up that white flag and say, well, we'll get back to culture when we're back together. No. Culture has to continue even when we're apart, probably more when we're apart than ever before. We're all looking for that connection more than we ever have. Now is the time to try and to attempt and see what you can figure out, and then share. When you find something that works, share it everywhere so we can all try to benefit from the learning.
Yeah, and Jeff, that goes back to the continuous improvement mindset and leading and the leading change competency, right? There's not a silver bullet right now. But whenever you're trying to get new ideas, better ways of doing things, faster ways of doing things, the idea is just, let's just bubble up a bunch of ideas and try some of them and see what sticks. And then when the ones fail, like you said, hey, tell everybody, hey, we tried it, it failed, we won't do that again, but we tried, and that led us to the next opportunity or next way to doing it that did work. So that's how change works too. You know, if we sit around waiting for the perfect answer, we're usually not going to get it, but we try something five times, we pull bits and pieces of each of the five, and then we come up with a pretty good solution that we never would have thought of if we sat there in a room trying to think it up.
You know, something else that I think would be very helpful is we don't necessarily want to completely reinvent the wheel, because there are organizations out there that have really thought through this, and they may be a little ahead of J.J. Taylor. Mm-hmm. So I think doing some benchmarking might be a way to be able to speed up the process a little bit. But I love your comments about failure. I mean, we just got to get out there and be confident enough to try some things and see what the results are. Some are going to work, some won't. But you know, at least we're out there moving the ball forward. We're not afraid to fail. We're going to fail fast, and we're going to be able to figure this out, you know, hopefully over a relatively short period of time.
Culture is the sum of the actions. And if we let off the gas, if we stop doing the things that make us special, if we say that, oh, you know, I don't need to get out and walk around because I can't right now. No, that doesn't work. Find a way. Find a different way. It may not look like walking around. It may not be walking into somebody's office anymore. There is still a way to get around to your team. We need communication. We need customer focus now more than ever. So I think that's, to me, what's been so fun about being able to talk about with this, you guys, in this timely moment, is to say, you know, this is the stuff that very often in a crisis situation gets put on the sideline, gets put on the back burner, right? But the crisis going on as long as it has, we have to realize that at a certain point, we got to take this back off the back burner, move it back to the front, because it can't get cold or it will get stale. And this stuff matters, perhaps even more in times of crisis, this stuff matters. And so if you're listening to this in real time and you're thinking to yourself, man, I love this stuff and it all sounds great, but I just haven't had time. This year's been crazy. We're dealing with staffing. We're dealing with change. We're dealing with a world gone mad. When do I have time for this stuff? The answer to me comes back to, you never don't have time for this stuff. You need it more than ever. And if you've been putting this on the sideline, if you've been putting this on the back burner for a while, time's up. Let's get back to being culture driven and let's get back to being on point, because this is what is making the difference for us and is certainly what's going to allow us to come out the other side of this stronger and better off than much of our competition, because this is what has kept us going when everything else is in chaos. Culture keeps us together.
You know, if I were going to kind of wrap things up after all of our conversations with all of these competencies, I think the essence of leadership, and this is something I've come to grips with just in the last few years, But the essence of leadership is really a couple of things. I think first of all, maybe first and foremost, I think each leader, J.J. Taylor, needs to ask themselves, do I care about my people? Do I really care about my people? Not just for the work that they do, but do I care about them as human beings, with families, with responsibilities at home? Do I care about them? And then the second thing is that I think everybody should challenge themselves with, am I passionate about leading people? And I would say that if you don't really care about your people and if you're not really passionate about being a leader, something that you love to do, then you're probably in the wrong job. And I think that's something that everybody at some point in time in their career, they need to think about it. Life's too short to be in a leadership role if it's not something that you love to do. I mean, yeah, the pay is good and the prestige is nice, but really what we need to do in life is do the things that we have giftings to be able to do. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves that if we're not wired to be a leader, if we're not gifted to be a leader, but we're gifted to be a great accountant or a great driver or a great operations person, then that's what we need to do, because life will be so much more fulfilling, will be so much more successful. But the folks that really take leadership seriously, that love what they do, those are the folks that are going to be really successful as leaders.
The last thing I'd say on it, Jeff, is, you know, we talk about culture and the J.J. Taylor first choice culture as a corporate thing, but that culture is experienced locally. And so looking in the mirror, if you're a leader listening, what does my first choice culture look like on my team that I have influence over? And go work on those things and protect those things. And if we have a bunch of small teams of 5, 6, 7, 8 people across the company of, 600, 700, whatever it is these days, that's going to build and maintain that J.J. Taylor first choice culture. But yeah, culture's experience locally. We can have all the corporate terms and training and support and teaching on it, but then application is at that local level, on that one team level, and then how do we build it there and then spread it throughout?
Culture is the sum of the parts. And if every team has a great culture, the company will have a great culture. So I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. If every leader runs a first choice team, then this will be a first choice company, because culture is the sum of our actions. Well, with that, I think we're going to put a bow on this. It's been a fantastic discussion. All of these have been fantastic discussions. So let me take a moment and thank my guests one more time. Bob, Matt, thank you so much for being a part of this, for helping us dig back into the archives and talk about the history of these competencies and where they came from and why they matter, and for giving us, all this great, great information and ideas to fill our toolboxes and make sure that as leaders, we have what we need to execute and live, and most importantly, maintain the company culture that we're all set out and tasked with delivering, because it is the sum of our actions. It is every manager doing their part. And the last 7 or 8 weeks here talking with you guys and getting a really nice set of tools and techniques that can help further that, I think has been tremendously valuable. So thank you both for being a part of this whole thing.
You know what, Jeff, this has been an absolute blast. And, I've got a special place in my heart for J.J. Taylor, because we go back, 10 or 12 years where this all started. And it's been such a joy, one, to be involved in all of that and then see the company grow and develop over the years in terms of building a great culture. And it's just been such a pleasure to work with you guys and then have a chance to go back and kind of do a kind of an assessment of everything and provide some history on the journey. But what a journey it's been. It's been fun. It's been a blessing for me. And couldn't feel more passionate about what you've been able to accomplish as an organization.
Yeah, Jeff, we're super grateful for J.J. Taylor. So many great people there. And it'd be fun 10 years from now or 5 years now to come back and talk about this and be able to say how much better it's gotten from now and built upon. And then just grateful for all the people anytime we're in Florida for work or on vacation. And I've got a product off your product list in stock at the store I go to, and it's cold. And a few times, you know, I'll see a J.J. Taylor truck or a van and stop the person and just say, hey, and I don't know him, but I tell him a quick 5-minute story about our history with you guys, and we have some good laughs, and I thank them. So it's always fun to do that when we're somewhere down in Florida. So this has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
It's been our pleasure. It's been my pleasure. I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing if you guys hadn't paved the way and laid the foundation. So thank you very much, because my work here is all built entirely on what you guys brought to us and how you helped set this company up for what we are doing now. So thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for all the work you guys have done. And thank you for you guys listening as well. We wouldn't do this without you. We couldn't do this without you. It is the managers and supervisors, the people listening to this podcast. Each one of you is our most important asset when it comes to building our culture, maintaining our culture, and keeping us first choiced. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being a part of it. And thank you for the work you're doing. Keep it up. And hopefully this will help you continue your journey in a first choice way. For all of us here, my name is Jeff Weaver. I've been your host, and this has been Calibrating Your Compass, a Brew University Leadership Podcast.